Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? Episode 292 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. My name is Derek Spartz. I took a short little trip, little getaway to Mexico. I'm back in Los Angeles. Johnny, we're doing this because we had a little scheduling mix up. Where are you right now?
I'm at a fishing park, a little pond in about a half an hour outside of Padilla.
This is you're not ocean fishing. This is just some pond you found. How'd you find this place?
Yeah. So it turns out there's a bunch of these like literal ponds, right? They're muddy looking ponds that people stock up with fish, and old British guys come and just spend the day, you know, drink beer and fish all sorts of kind of cool stuff. I mean, you can catch, you know, these like, you know, 30-pound Siamese catfish. You can catch, you know, these like, you know, just all these exotic fish, all these different kind of clarps and everything. And some of them are really big.
So they're not like natural to the pond. There's someone actually stocking them. So there's like just a variety of fish.
Yeah. There's like 20 different fish you can catch, you know, from, you know, alligator.
Wait, there's gators in there?
No, not a real alligator. Okay. But like an alligator. You can probably catch piranhas. Like, there's everything here.
That actually sounds cool, but I don't know if you should be eating those. That water looked a little sketch from what you showed me. Oh, okay. All right, good.
And then they cook Thai food, and I ordered a full English breakfast as well. So, yeah, everything's good.
Nice. Very cool. So this is an episode that we actually recorded a while back, but I wanted to talk about it because, first of all, you're the perfect person, me and you, to do this because we both love talking about cars. This is at least car adjacent. And last year, I think we were pretty heavy on car stuff. So I wanted to give people a break and hold off on this one until 2024. But this is something that everyone deals with. I don't care if you're even in a small town or the biggest of cities in the world. You have to, at some point, deal with traffic. Mm-hmm. And another hot topic is AI. So I think a lot of people are kind of freaked out about AI, thinking it's, you know, it's like the movies and it's just going to take over everything and become sentient and robots are going to rule the world. But there's actually really practical applications. And I think this is one of the best ones that everyone has to deal with. This is AI controlled traffic for your car, your commute, your parking, everything. I mean, what were your thoughts about this, Johnny, going into it?
You know, I wasn't sure because AI, I mean, definitely it's here. You know, we've seen what it can do. But at the same time, it always feels like it's a false start where, you know, people get so excited for AR, VR. You know,
I think everyone expects like a 10-year jump within a month, and that's just not what's going to happen.
Yeah. So I definitely think it's needed, you know, whatever they can do to control both traffic, but also parking, it would just make life easier for everyone, you know, because I don't think we're going to go into a walking centric world or bicycle centric world anytime soon again. You know, one of the reasons why I like living in Europe is because you can take, you know, the tram, public transport, you can walk everywhere. But in big metropolises and cities and sprawling cities, you're always gonna have to have a car. So you're gonna have to deal with it. If we can have technology make our lives better, then I'm all for it.
And this is something that I thought would be such an easy solution. I don't get why cities in the United States are not using this, because everyone seems to be obsessed with this self-driving car. And I just don't see it happening. Where I live, they're testing them all the time. I get stuck behind them. They're like the worst drivers you've ever seen when you see these computers controlling the cars. They're years, if not decades, out from this technology. And then what are you going to do with all the people that still drive a car? I think you either got to switch to all computer or nothing. And that's just not going to happen for decades and decades and decades. And this is something I thought we could like implement tomorrow.
Yeah, well, we should have implemented yesterday.
Yeah.
I definitely agree. The way they're going to roll out self-driving cars is they need to have certain areas or certain cities be self-driving only, and then have that slowly expand out. But you're right. That'll take 10 years, maybe even 20 or 30.
Yeah, I think everyone just got really excited about the technology, and then we're now realizing that it's so much further away. So that's why we want to talk to Parkquery. They are based in Switzerland, of all places, but they have implemented this all over the world. Johnny's going to talk to the co-founder and CEO. His name is Andrea Fossati, and they're doing some really interesting stuff. So why don't we see what Andrea has to say? Hey, bosses, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. The show will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Andrea Fassati, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you know, excited to talk to you about kind of tech and how AI has changed things. I know you've had a business that helps with parking kind of intelligence for many, many years. I actually saw an interview of you over 5 years ago. Has a lot changed in the last, you know, five or plus years that you've been involved with this business?
Yes, there has been quite some changes on one side. Fortunately, I would say on the client side, because people are getting finally more and more aware of AI. They are finally understanding what is possible. They realize that what we do is actually reality and they can trust it. They can have accurate data through AI. So this perception of the clients has evolved positively, I would say, a lot in the last years. We founded a company back in 2014, so it's been now quite a while since we started. And I would say at the start, most of the conversation with the clients were like, yeah, you know, we can extract parking information from images using AI. And the reaction was, oh, is it even possible? Is it even already something on the market? So the main obstacle for us has really been to win this sort of perception barrier. But nowadays, I have to say, I don't encounter this type of reaction anymore.
So I remember about 10 years ago when I was driving just as a consumer, it was very normal to enter the bottom of a lot, having no idea how busy it was going to be. You kind of hope for a free space, but really just drive in circles until you go, you know, up and up and up and up, and you kind of just hope you'll find a spot before you get to the very top. Do you feel like consumers are just no longer willing to do that with all this technology?
Indeed, I think that's really part of it. And probably, you know, in the parking garages, so in the indoor parking, there have been other technologies, not as intelligent, let's say, as AI, but data has been available for quite a while using just infrared sensors or other types of sensors on the ceiling. So they are sort of used to this kind of data, but where people are not really used to having real-time information is more on the outdoor side, and that's kind of the hole we try to fill with our work here at Parkery. So I think that's where we want to focus mostly.
In general, I'm assuming it's not just a convenience for customers. Is it somehow beneficial to the owner of these businesses to make more money?
So yes, there are let's say, different aspects of it. On one side, as you said, it's really the convenience of the drivers to find immediately an available parking space. But this normally also converts into them spending more time into the business, be it an airport, a shop, a commercial center, which is then, of course, positive for the owners. On the other side, the other aspect of it is, of course, the data. So they can finally go and take data-driven decisions rather than just gut-feeling decisions. That's what happens normally in parking. The people think their parking is always full or always empty. But normally for outdoor parking, people don't usually have data. And we are trying to change these into actually making informed decisions about whether to expand or reduce a parking area, for example, or about which pricing they should introduce or change based on how busy the area is rather than on what they think or perceive it is, and just by visiting it from time to time.
I can imagine there's even benefits for, you know, even a free lot, because I know, for example, my cousin used to park at the shopping center across the street for years for free, and I had asked, you know, does he never get towed? And he said, well, you know, he just moves it, you know, once every few days, and you know, there's so many cars there coming in and out that nobody notices how long he's been parked there.
Correct. That's the, let's say, the nastier part of the use case, which I left voluntarily, let's say, as a last. But of course, what the owners can now do, they can actually also do enforcement. So they can find out, for example, if people stay for too long on a certain parking area and take appropriate actions, or find out whether people are parking in the area where they should not be parking, and also in that case, then someone to do enforcement. So this is also another added benefit. It's usually not really the main use case when it comes to the clients, but it also another nice value added opportunity that they get with the software.
So I think it was either Derek or someone who submitted this question. They asked, you know, can this technology be used at like intersections to see how many, you know, cars are driving through, you know, a certain intersection at certain times?
Yes, that's correct. So the idea is that you can basically measure very accurately in a very detailed way traffic wherever you want. So it can be on intersections, on highways, on pedestrian road, and you can simply count how many vehicles go through, which type of vehicles go through those intersections, which way they take within the intersection, and also even how fast they go can be estimated quite accurately. And all this just by using a standard camera pointing at an intersection, ideally as high as possible. Even a drone actually would be a good mounting point for a camera, and then you can retrieve really a lot of information that is otherwise normally done manually, so in a very painful and not so efficient way.
Yeah, speaking of painful, there is one intersection in Chiang Mai, Thailand, where I used to live and I was visiting recently.
Yeah.
It's the most painful intersection in the world. There's a police booth where there's four guys just sitting in there all day, and I think their job is to turn the lights, you know, red and green based on traffic. But
wow.
They've decided to just wait until there's not a single car left, you know, trying to go that direction before they change it. And sometimes I'm waiting there, you know, 15, 20 minutes across the street. I would imagine there should be a better system. And is this something that technology and AI can help with?
Absolutely. So there are countries where this is actually already done. For example, in Switzerland, most of the traffic lights are equipped with the induction loops under the street, so they can actually sense when there is a vehicle waiting, and they can adjust then the traffic light waiting time accordingly. But the drawback is that installing these induction loops is extremely expensive, because you have to literally dig up the street, install the loop, cover the street. At the same time, you have to block the traffic for a few hours. So this is not something that any country in the world can deploy on a large scale. On the other end, by just putting a few cameras directly on the same masts where the traffic lights are, then you can convert literally any traffic lights into a more intelligent system using AI to process the videos from those cameras. So that's absolutely applicable, I would say, anywhere.
So are these traffic lights wired for it? I'm assuming you can get power from it, but what about like internet connection?
Yes. So the idea is that there is usually a traffic controller in a cabinet somewhere nearby the traffic light. So the idea is that you put the intelligence in the same cabinet where the traffic controller is, so that basically it gets the feeds of the cameras, it processes these feeds, and then it sends the information to the traffic controller, which then takes some standard decisions on red and green based on such information.
Okay. And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, will hate this technology when it comes to using it for like, you know, a speed trap or a speed camera. But for me personally, actually, I really enjoy the technology in countries I've been to where they have it. So, for example, in Kyiv, Ukraine, I was speeding and all of a sudden I just got a push notification on my phone saying, hey, we caught you going, you know, 15 kilometers over. Here's a photo of your car. Would you like to pay it or would you like to fight it? And I press, you know, I'll pay. And right there on my phone, I was able to, you know, use Apple Pay, double click,
pay the bill.
Yeah.
And it was very, very convenient. I'd much rather have that than waste the time, you know, getting pulled over, having a cop, you know, shine a light in your face to say, you know, where are you going? You know, why are you driving so fast?
I agree with you. Yeah, that's on one side, of course, it forces people to comply more and more. So that's not necessarily the goal, is not always to just get money through the fines, but it's also more to get people to perceive that there is accurate controls around, and then you just comply and don't get a fine.
Yeah, I can see that. And speaking of Ukraine as an example, for parking lots, they actually had a really unique system. I haven't seen this elsewhere. Maybe you can tell me how popular it is around the world, but when I would go into a paid parking lot center, instead of having to press a button and get a ticket and then, you know, going to a machine or holding up the line to pay it on my way out, it is completely automated. I think they take a picture of my license plate as I'm going in, and they automatically...
Exactly. Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah. And I guess they calculate how long I've been there. And if I've been there for less than, you know, the free amount of time, then it just opens and I go through. If not, you know, it shows how much I need to pay, and I could just pay with a credit card, you know, at the terminal, like as I drive out.
Yeah.
How common is that, and how does it work?
It's getting a lot of traction. So it's more and more common throughout Europe. And I believe also in the US lately. So these are simply called free flow parking garages, so you can just enter with your car. There will be a camera at the entrance, basically capturing your license plate. Then it will measure how long you stay, and then when you leave, it will check out, and then you will either pay directly on the phone at the terminal. You might have an account associated to it, and then you basically sum all your parking events, and then at the end of the month you get a bill. So there is many ways that you can handle this, but of course the nice side is that it's very convenient for the driver, so they don't have to think about, oh, I need to get my ticket, where is my ticket, and now before leaving I have to go to the terminal, pay for it. And I think most of the parking garages will convert to the system in the next years. As you say, it's too convenient.
How much money, you know, how big of an investment is it for these parking garages to convert to all this tech? And is there a return on their investment, you know, maybe on the time savings or more customers, or, you know, in some other way? Do they actually make the money back? Are they willing to invest this money up front?
So it's actually a bit counterintuitive, but equipping a parking garage with such a system is actually cheaper than having the terminals and having the ticket machines, and because the barriers also disappear at some point. If you want, you can have it completely free flow. So the good thing is that, yeah, it's actually not a big investment. You just have to put a couple of cameras where all the different access roads of the parking garage are, and then you're good to go. So I don't think the investment is actually a big barrier. It's actually a bigger saving compared to what people are used to install in a parking garage at the moment.
Or I guess even the cost of labor to have so much staff there.
Exactly. So that's also completely simplified indeed.
Yeah, and actually, even for my personal house, I live in an apartment with a shared parking lot. And one day I decided to put a camera outside my kitchen window that pointing at the lot. And I didn't realize how much of a time saving it was to be able to just open the app, check the camera, see if there's any free spots before I pull in.
Yeah. So that's actually what some of our clients also told me. So this is actually the main use case that we cover at Parkery. So the idea is simply to replace you watching the camera with a system that can just process the images automatically and just get you the information that you need. So that's really what we focus on mostly. And the interesting thing is that also, for example, in the US, we are now starting the deployment with the state of Ohio in exactly the same way. So they had in all the truck rest areas throughout the state of Ohio, they had already cameras where the truck drivers would do the same as you. So they would connect to the webcam, check the camera there, and then have a look and see if there were some rest area bays available for them to stop. And now we just replace that by our software. So we are simply processing all the images from the webcams at these rest areas and conveniently collecting the information, delivering it to the Ohio DOT platform, where the drivers can check either with the smartphone or even at the with some variable message signs installed on the highways directly for the data rather than going through the images first. So it's a very common use case.
Yeah, and it's definitely just so much easier, you know, for everyone. I can imagine not wanting to pull a semi truck into a, you know, into a lot just to realize it's full. It's much easier when you're, you know, 10 kilometers out to check first, because you usually have an option to go somewhere else.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. So speaking of parking, I mean, this, I guess it sounds a little bit evil, but has any of these lot owners thought, you know what, when we're at, you know, let's say 90% capacity or 80% capacity, or whatever it is, just to have a higher price. And that way it discourages, you know, people from, you know, from filling up the lot, you know, or, you know, having, and I guess it can work as a discount too when, you know, when it's completely empty, they can have flexible pricing.
Yeah, so that's an interesting concept. It's called dynamic pricing. And it, let's say, it is making a lot of sense. So, of course, you want to balance out the occupancy throughout different lots or even within a city. So the main obstacle to this is not really the technology itself. It's rather from a regulatory standpoint, because usually the parking pricing, especially for public parking, are heavily regulated. So in most countries, it's actually not allowed to change that so frequently. Whereas where it would instead be possible, it's in private lot. And I think especially in those near the airports where you have to book in advance, I think they already apply something similar, so similar to the flight tickets. So whenever a certain lot for a certain hour in a few days, let's say, is foreseen to be completely busy, then they would increase the cost for the last few drivers. Mm-hmm. And they would possibly also reduce the cost for some other times, or maybe the lot is not so easy, so that they will push people to book it then.
I know that you're based in Zurich in Switzerland, but your customers are all over the world. It looks like 30 countries. Has there been certain places that have been a lot more open to, you know, this technology and AI versus other places that are saying, you know, we don't need that?
Yeah, so that's an interesting point, because it's very connected to what I mentioned at the start of this conversation, saying about perception. Because what is actually the main obstacle is about people not wanting to have cameras around.
Mm.
And not because cameras will be taking personal data. We just actually measure the occupancy of parking spaces. But just because me, for example, as a politician running a city, I don't want my citizens to complain about cameras, even though they are for a good purpose for them, just because they are cameras and they feel somehow observed. Mm-hmm. You know, the big brother feeling. This is actually something that has been quite a differentiating factor between countries. So there are some countries, namely UK or the US, where this is absolutely not a problem. Some others, for example, Germany, where this is actually... it has been quite an obstacle. It is, over time, finally being more and more accepted, but especially at the beginning of our journey, this was really a very big barrier to have cameras around. Nowadays, I think it's mostly a matter of just awareness of it. So there are countries where people are, I would say, more aware of what is possible with technology. We get more inquiries directly, even from the clients contacting us after finding us on Google. There are other countries where maybe also the purchasing power is not so large, and then people prefer not to do so. Our main competitor is actually people not doing anything to manage the parking lot and just being as it is.
Yeah.
And in some countries, that's actually the decision, mostly because of the cost.
Okay. And in terms of costs, approximately, I'm sure it varies a lot, but, you know, how high are these costs, you know, for the installation and then the monthly kind of ongoing costs?
Yeah. So the good thing is that the cost of the installation are very manageable normally, because it's just about installing a few cameras throughout a parking lot, which people actually do anyway, very often, just for security and surveillance, especially when we talk about private parking lots.
Yeah.
So installing a few cameras around, it's something that you know, there are many companies offering it. It is not part of our offering. We work with local partners that can install just cameras. So there is, of course, a very large basis of companies that can handle that. And that's why this keeps the cost for this part of the project very low. On the other side, we have a very flexible pricing model, which literally depends on the amount of parking bays that we monitor. And it's with simple monthly fee of, I would say, a couple of dollars normally per parking space per month. The running costs are also usually very manageable. Of course, if we talk about much larger parking lots, then we can obviously adjust a bit the pricing. But let's say for a small lot, like your residential parking lot, this will literally be a few dollars per month. So definitely manageable.
Oh, definitely makes sense. And yeah, it's great that you work with any kind of existing cameras, you know, and cameras nowadays are surprisingly pretty cheap, you know, and decent quality too, with, you know, with you know, IR, night vision, and, you know, pretty high quality.
Exactly. So that's also something that we usually recommend to our clients, is to buy the cameras as dumb as possible, because nowadays there is a lot of intelligence pulled directly in the camera. But this is for use cases which go a bit beyond what we need in most scenarios. So all we need to do for the camera is to do what it is meant to be doing. So just take images and send them to a server, and then the intelligent part will be done by the software. So we have been working with cameras costing even $100 or less. Because, yeah, all we need from them is just them taking images.
Okay, that's amazing. So I guess a lot of people are thinking, you know, more, you know, we have an investment podcast. They're thinking, how does this kind of affect their investing? You know, for your company, are you a private company? Are you taking investments? And also kind of in the broader, you know, markets, how has this AI and tech, how do you see it kind of going forward for companies like this?
So to answer your question, on one side, so we are still a private company. We had a couple of investment rounds in the past. We are not taking investments as of now, but we probably will be in the coming months. In general, what I see, let's say, especially on what you mentioned earlier, so the traffic analysis, there is really a very crowded market. So there is a lot of companies offering that. It's becoming more and more of a commodity. Even the camera manufacturers have started putting that as part of the camera functionalities. So on that side, I think this is what people mostly nowadays expect. And that's why for us as a company, we instead focus on the niche where we think we still have an edge on other companies because of the 10 years we have been operating, namely on parking analytics and monitoring. So on one side, I think I still see the market exploding with alternatives to understand what is going on in cities, mostly on traffic, pedestrian flow. On the other side, I think we still, by having a very, very, very focused use case, I think we still have the chances to survive in such a crowded market.
Okay, awesome. And my final question is, you know, the last, I would say, year or two, the word AI has been such a hot topic where I feel like a lot of companies will say their products are, you know, couldn't be possible if it wasn't for AI, or, you know, AI is the heart of it, you know, while it's just, it's another technology, you know, tech is tech. In your case, like, how much of this was possible before the term, you know, AI, well, you know, was being thrown out, and versus are these things that just have grown only because of, you know, actual artificial, you know, intelligence popping up and growing?
Yeah, thanks. So this is a very interesting question, Johnny. So on one side, AI is nowadays mostly also a buzzword, and several businesses that even don't have anything to do just mentioning it as part of their pitch, because of course investors will open their ears more. Talking about us, I think when I started the company back in 2014, I mean, AI was already there. It has been there for years. Just not at the scale that we are checking and watching right now. We just use different algorithms. So instead of using deep learning back then, we were using some other algorithms called random forests, which were still an AI algorithm, not as hyped as deep learning is, of course, for different reasons. So I would say we have been definitely within the AI scope from the start. Nonetheless, of course, computer vision is the technology we use, which is basically software to automatically analyze what's happening in videos and images. So this has been one of the, let's say, especially in the last years, one of the most used technologies because of what has been now possible with the arrival of deep learning. Because I remember, just as an anecdote, so I used to do, during my PhD, I was working on understanding people motion from videos, from just single camera videos. And I worked on a thesis for 5 years, and at the end, I kind of reached some usable results. But nowadays, what has been, let's say, the outcome of my thesis, anyone can do with just an AI library to do people tracking and body positive imaging. So there has been an enormous advance in this kind of topic. So everything that you can do with cameras and images, and that's why now people expect and perceive what they can do. And this actually connects to what I also mentioned earlier. It's now the public perception barrier is finally lower. People realize what is now possible, and that's what is also contributing to the hype of AI.
And you know, you mentioned deep learning. Is this something that, you know, I don't want to say like can grow and learn by itself, but is it one of those things where the more data it collects, the more features it can grow kind of on its own, or is it more linear based where, you know, you have to introduce another program?
No, so that's actually the big leap in AI allowed by deep learning is actually that it can collect and learn from many, many more examples than what it was even thinkable before. So now you can feed a neural network with literally billions of images, and of course it will learn from these images, and its output will be very, very accurate. So the leap that has been allowed by the deep learning is simply the fact that you now, with the very powerful hardware that is available nowadays, you can literally feed this network with a lot of examples, and therefore its results can be so flabbergasting in the end.
Okay, that's fantastic. I'm definitely excited for the future. Is there anything that you're, you know, particularly excited about for the future that you see is going to be up and coming in the next, you know, 5 or 10 years?
Well, honestly, so I very much like generative AI. This is not part at all at the moment of our offering. It's not really connected. But I think this is a field where I also personally, I would like to explore more also during the year and trying to see. I'm sure there are ways on how we at Parkoury and of course also many other companies can benefit of it. So my personal goal for the year is to try to explore a bit how we can take advantage for our business of generative AI.
Well, awesome. So yeah, if that happens in the future, definitely let us know. You know, be a great follow-up in a few years to see how much has changed.
We'll be happy to, Johnny. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Grazie. Ciao, bello.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Ciao,
hey, bosses. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. The show will be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, really useful info, Johnny. I don't think it applies to you right now, because was that a rooster I just heard in the background?
It's either that or some other kind of Jurassic animal. But yeah, you're absolutely right. When I'm out here, I'm riding the world's best transport for dealing with traffic.
Like a moped or something?
It's a little 125 tiny scooter. I can drive anywhere. I can cut between lanes way easier than, you know, a big motorcycle or a big bike would. You know, definitely, you know, when there's bumper to bumper traffic, I can go on the side, I can, you know, basically do whatever I want, and parking is never an issue because I can literally just leave it anywhere. There's always a space for a scooter, especially in Thailand.
Yeah, I actually know someone in LA that swears by the scooter. He has a Vespa, and he's like, I can get anywhere in the city within like 20 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, you can, but you're basically taking your life in your own hands here in LA. I mean, everyone's on their phone. No one's paying attention. You can lane split like that here too. But I had a motorcycle for a couple of years and I got rid of it because I was just like, I had this like vision that something bad's going to happen. And I don't know. It kind of freaked me out. Just seeing like how much people are checked out of driving.
It's weird because here in Asia and even in Ukraine, like I never saw anyone really on their phones. It's very uncommon.
It's definitely an American thing.
I think Americans are just so tied to constant inputs and constant connections where we have to be posting or reading something, where you can't just sit and just enjoy the music or enjoy a good conversation.
Everyone's in their own world. I mean, you can look inside a car, there'll be four people in the car, four phones are up all doing their own thing.
And out here, you know, it's people are used to random things on the road, whether it's other scooters, whether it's a, you know, I mean, I guess we don't really have that many wild animals crossing the road, but, you know, there's always something happening, right?
Yep.
Where you have to just pay attention. But in the U.S., often you just have these kind of either long, you know, straightaways with nothing, or you have that with traffic. And either way, people are bored, so they're on their phones, which is terrible. I wish they would have done something about that by now, but you know, they still haven't.
Yeah, I mean, we have laws on the books, but they're not enforced. Just, I mean, nothing's enforced here in California, but that's a whole nother subject. Why don't we talk about some of the like crazy archaic technology that we've seen in the last even few years? I mean, you're traveling all over the place. I'm in quite a few places. And one you mentioned when you talked to Andrea was there's a intersection in Thailand where there's guys manually changing the light.
Yeah, and they do a terrible job. You know, you would think that they would do it like way better because they can adjust it perfectly for every flow of traffic. But instead, what they do is they just wait for every car to pass, and they're like, "Oh, okay, I should switch it now."
Yep. So one thing they do here in Los Angeles that drives me crazy—they started this a few years ago—is everyone drives like a maniac. I mean, it just is what it is. But now they're purposely setting lights to flick red every so often just to slow traffic down.
Stupid.
So a lot of these roads, like where I live, you know, we're in the canyons or in the mountains, and you're driving up and then it'll just flash red for like 3 seconds just to slow you down. There's no traffic coming the other way. It's like just to slow the cars down. But it's like,
that's dangerous. You'll slam on your brakes and you'll accident. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I get you want to slow traffic down, but it's also you're just stopping momentum for everybody. And then that just trickles back to the whole road and messes up traffic even further. I was in Hollywood like last week, Hollywood Boulevard, like the main Walk of Fame one. It was a quiet night. There's no one out. Every stoplight on every block turned red. I mean, it would turn green. I go, turn red less than a block later, like short blocks. So it was obviously timed like that just to have not people continuing. But I'm like, why aren't you timing it so when that turns green, the next one turns green, the next one turns green, so you can keep a flow of traffic?
So if you're going the speed limit, you know, say you're 35 miles an hour, you can just go and just coast. And that way it encourages people to drive slow, but it's still not stop and go.
There's just like easy solutions that I'm just like, if I was in charge of traffic, this would be like day one stuff.
Yeah. Well, one thing that we have here that I haven't seen in the U.S., it's really simple. But you know how when you're, you know, waiting for a red light and kind of thinking, how long is it going to be?
I know what you're going to say already. Yeah.
there's a countdown timer. So people.
Oh, okay. That's even better, actually, than what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. What was your solution?
When I was in Germany, I noticed maybe a second or two before it turns green, it'll just blink yellow quick to like, hey, heads up, I'm about to turn green. I thought that was handy too.
Yeah, minimum. I like that as well. But the countdown is amazing, and a minimum of a 10 second countdown.
I love that.
And what actually allows people to do is I manually turn off my engine on my scooter.
Mm-hmm.
That way you save gas. It's good for the environment, but also it's just more quiet. You know, it's more calm. And everybody kind of does the same.
That's the other argument too. It's like everyone wants to be, oh, we need to burn less gas, be more efficient and everything, but you're purposely stopping traffic. The most gas you're ever going to burn is just sitting going nowhere. That's the worst miles per gallon you could get because you're getting zero.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I definitely agree. There's a lot of things we can do with technology when it comes to, you know, both driving as well as with parking. I'm excited for the future. What do you think is actually going to get implemented? You know,
Actually, I want to mention one more thing that I thought was cool. And this was, you know, over 10 years ago. I lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for 1 year. And at night, when, you know, when traffic's obviously slower, I think it was after 10 p.m. or maybe after midnight, on some of the, not the major intersections, but some of the side streets and everything, at all the traffic lights, they would flip them to either turn flash red or flash yellow. So you can just roll through the intersection and not have to wait at an empty intersection at a red light while no one else goes by. I just thought that, I'm like, that's so smart. Just keep everybody moving.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, here's the exact opposite. I was in Johannesburg in South Africa, and there was a sign next to the red light that said, "Don't stop after dark."
Just go, Johnny.
I was like, well, why even have them red then? Just have them be flashing yellow.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you got to do. They're all set by that. So, yeah. I mean, I guess the things that we have seen implement, even though he mentioned it, but I feel like these have been around since I was born, are the sensors in the ground. And I mean, we have that, and you see them happen. I don't feel like that's anything new. And, you know, that's been around for at least since the 80s, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the one thing that I have noticed, at least out here, I don't know about in the U.S. yet, that just is such a no-brainer, is instead of having a ticket agent or like a place to, you know, have to go to like a ticket booth in a parking garage, have to pay, especially if it's one of those things where it's free for the first hour or something, mm-hmm. just have a camera scan out license plate and then do the calculation for us. And if we have to pay something, just have it be, you know, with Apple Pay or some other kind of wireless pay. It just makes it so much easier, you know, just having.
We do have that. Like all the newer parking garages, though, but they still serve you a ticket. I'm like, why am I still getting a ticket? So yeah. It'll kick out a ticket, and then it shows your license plate on the ticket. So obviously the camera read the plate like he said it did, but then he didn't mention, it sounded like the ones he was talking about are ticketless. Here, you know, you get the ticket, there's a barcode, and then it has your license plate on it and says what time you entered. And then when you leave, you got to put that ticket back in the machine. I'm like, well, if the computer can already read my plate, it should know what time I got here and what time I'm leaving. Why do I need this ticket? Exactly. Because if you lose your ticket, it's like a $30 charge.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, in the U.S., it's one of those things where, because it's such a big country and there's so many, it takes so long to get everybody on board.
Yeah.
You can't force anything. You know, I mean, this is why we still use... I mean, some people still use checks, literally, right?
Oh, I saw one the other day. I'm like, where did you crawl out from?
And even with credit cards, I mean, the fact that we have to give someone our credit card, the server of the credit card, they go in the back somewhere, they just kind of swipe it, and then they come back and have us sign a piece of paper. You know,
I was at the airport bar the other day, and this Polish guy ordered a beer, and then he's like, you know, he said however much it was, the bartender, and the guy's like, oh, Apple Pay, and he's like, yeah. So they took Apple Pay, but they don't have like the portable machines like everywhere else has now. No one has those in America where you can just bring it to the person. So the guy's like, unlock your phone and then give me your phone. And he's like, you're not taking my phone. Oh my God, and he's like, well, then you're not getting the beer. So the guy, he's like, you have to give me your phone. The guy was just stunned. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. I would be pissed. I would be like, you know what? I'm going to walk back to this machine with you. The only one machine that you guys can afford to buy. Yeah, and actually, so out here in Thailand, they have something called QR code pay, which is brilliant because you just open up your banking app, and they actually invented it during COVID when they wanted to do contactless payments and cashless payments. Mm-hmm. And every single bank uses the same, you know, one. So imagine in the US, if Zelle, you know, decided to make QR payments. Anybody can generate a QR code on their phone, and you can just print it out on a piece of paper or just show it to someone, and people can just type in the amount they want to pay you. Press send. You get automatically goes in your account. No fees. You get a notification. It's super, super easy. So even a street side vendor selling $1, you know, pieces of cut fruit, mm-hmm. you know, they just print it out once. They normally laminate it just so it lasts forever. But what's really nice is restaurants or kind of more sophisticated places like bars and stuff, they can generate a unique code for your specific bill. So then as soon as you scan it, it populates the total amount. And
does it ask for any like personal information? Because I feel like I've seen those here, but then they're like, fill out your email and all this other stuff.
Nothing.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. And it keeps all your receipts. It's so easy. It's such a no-brainer. Like they literally made this in a few months during COVID. So if Thailand can do it, I don't know why we can't do it in the U.S.
Yeah, it's insane that we lead everything in technology, supposedly, but we never seem to implement it to ourselves first. Okay, Johnny, I have a challenge for you.
Okay.
I think, at least in Los Angeles, this the best business ever is to own a parking lot. We're a car city. Everyone needs to park. Imagine you bought a parking lot in a very tourist-heavy area, and you call up Andrea, and you're like, hey, I want your camera system. So he implements it. And what kind of tactics are you using to maximize your profits on this parking lot using his system?
Well, I don't know if I ever told you this, but my internship when I was like 18, downtown San Francisco, I remember going there every morning at like 8 a.m. or something. And there's a guy there collecting $20 for a car for them to park. Maybe it was $10 at the time. It was a long time ago. And as soon as the lot got full, he would just go home.
And my work here is done.
Yeah. Like the people are going to park the whole day. And, you know, it's not worth him standing around to make another, few bucks here and there.
That makes sense.
So basically it's free parking, like if someone leaves, but he just works an hour a day. He doesn't have to do anything. And I thought, man, I should own a parking lot. And yeah. Then I realized downtown San Francisco are like $10 million. But
yeah.
that on one hand is the least possible technology. But even if I had that system, I would still have cameras just to be able to, for safety, number one, but second, to monitor how many spots there are. And then third, I could actually just hire someone to collect those $20 for me and be able to monitor by camera from wherever I am, even if I'm at a fishing pond in Thailand.
That's true.
But if I had a bigger truck, I would absolutely do the system where you have the camera, make it ticketless, and then that way, the people can know where to park. You know, each floor, we can know exactly how many spots there are. I would do everything. I would do all of it.
I like the fact that, the camera could send you an alert, be like, hey, after 24 hours, let me know which cars have been there for that long. And then you can call up the tow guy and get them out of there. And I'm sure the tow guys kick you back a few bucks and then you have another open spot to sell too.
Yeah, that's actually really smart as well. Especially if you have signs saying, you can't park there for, overnight or more than 24 hours.
And then you kind of brought this up too. It's kind of timely because I don't know if you heard, Johnny, but the fast food restaurant Wendy's, they said they were going to start changing prices on I don't know if it was in the restaurant, but for sure on like DoorDash and Uber Eats based on demand. So when it's slower, it'll be cheaper. And when it's busier, it'll be more expensive. Now, you could kind of do that same thing with a parking lot too.
Yeah, well, the parking lot makes more sense because the problem with that is people start associating the cost of your restaurant with and that pisses people off.
Yeah, they got a lot of backlash for it. I think they already rethought that decision.
Yeah, but also people would just stop ordering from you because even if the prices go down, they won't even check because they're like, well, last time I checked, it was high. So that Wendy's is just expensive.
Yeah, and you're kind of screwed on parking. If you got to park somewhere, you got to park somewhere.
Yeah, so that I think definitely makes sense, the dynamic pricing. I mean, it's kind of like ticket sales. I mean, absolutely, they should do this with ticket sales. When I used to run the Nomad Summit, it was hard to know how many tickets I should sell at the early bird special versus last minute tickets, things like that, because you never know what really someone's willing to pay and also how much discount you need to give them to kind of just start it, right? Because if the conference is or the parking lot's empty, it's kind of hard to know that you're gonna at least break even. And I don't know about parking lots as much, but there's almost everything else in the world, whether it's a restaurant or a conference. If there's zero people going or there's zero people sitting inside, it's hard to get more customers. You kind of need like something there.
I was kind of thinking weather dependent too, because I live at the beach and there's huge lots across from me. And in the wintertime, if it's raining or something, it's $5 to park there. But mid-July, it's going to be an 85 degree day on a Saturday. It's $30 to park there.
Yeah, so that would be easy. I would absolutely tie in the weather app to the parking AI system because the day before, at least the day of, if it's going to be a busy beach day, just based on the temperature and the conditions, if it's going to rain or if it's going to be sunny.
Yeah, I love that idea. That's actually perfect, especially in the beach analogy or any kind of weather dependent like tourist spot. I think that would be so easy and like just hands off, like literally just tell the computer when it's nice out, raise the prices.
Yeah, and also you can even have it plug in holidays or 3-day weekends.
Yep.
Because a normal Monday can be very different than a Labor Day weekend.
I think you just convinced me to buy a parking lot, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, my friend just caught another fish. And so he's at 2 and I'm at 0. So I think we should wrap this up. And I got to get back to the fishing life while you get back to being in traffic.
Sounds good. Well, I know this wasn't a direct investment episode, but I think it's always something to keep an eye on. There are some other companies out there that are investable doing this. In China, Alibaba, for one, it's just a small piece of their company. They're like the Amazon of China. but they've implemented this and like seen overnight changes in traffic. So I think it's a really exciting space. If anyone knows of some more direct investments into this, please let us know on Boss Lounge, in Patreon, everywhere. And if you want to learn more about Parquery, they got this cool video about how it all works. It's a really good like demonstration video. I'll post a link to their website. And yeah, I think that's it, Johnny. You sound like a slacker over there. You better get back to fishing.
I know. So let's go enjoy the good life. This is what you guys can look forward to when you're semi-retired, or at least financially independent. So we'll wait for the next quarterly update for that. But if anyone is a Patreon, you can check out our last one by video and you can see little updates for us meeting up as well. So, Derek, always good talking to you. And I look forward to seeing you in person for the next Patreon meetup.
Yes. And there's info on that in Patreon as well. See you guys next week.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.